Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for coming out tonight. Thank you all so much for coming out tonight to celebrate our final evening of the Hemingway Summer Poetry Series. It has been so wonderful to celebrate a piece of Poetsburg the past few months here, and it's always wonderful to hear from some of the many voices of the craft that reside here locally. I'm very excited personally to continue reading and celebrating poetry all month, thanks to Hemingway's inspiration, and of course, anyone that's participating in the Sealy Challenge. This is also a great time to get some new books for that this month. So a little bit about myself and White Whale very quickly. My name is Ari, I'm the events coordinator here at White Whale. If you don't know this about us, we are a family-owned, general interest, independent bookstore here in Pittsburgh's Bloomfield neighborhood. Our motto is conversation, community, and culture, and we strive to be a home for book lovers. Our events programming features local, national, and international writers and translators reading, discussing, and celebrating literature of all genres for all ages. And just to kick things off, I'm going to give you a few events coming up that we think you might be interested in. On Wednesday, August 16th, we hope to see you for another evening of exceptional verse poetry featuring three beloved Pittsburgh poets, Shaheen Dill, Nancy Krygowski, and Bob Lickey. Be sure to check out Nancy's tiny weekly newspaper, Tiny Day, tonight in the meantime at a cafe. And on Thursday, August 17th, it is our joy to host the launch of Ed Simon's new Lit Crit Meets memoir work, Heaven, Hell, and Paradise Lost. Ed is a champion for Appalachian and regional writers, so it's always a joy to give him the spotlight and celebrate with him. And he'll be joined in conversation by Patrick McGinty. And lastly, another event coming up on Friday, August 18th, we are thrilled to host Daniel Krause for his newest book, Whale Ball. It will be an evening of scientifically accurate whale-centered horror in our White Whale bookstore, so kind of feels like destiny. And he'll be joined in conversation with Gwendolyn Kiss and Ben Rubin. You can find out about these specific events and more in RSVP at whitewhalebookstore.com. And just a few notes for the protocol for this evening. We are live streaming this event on Zoom for folks at home. So, hey, folks at home, thank you for tuning in virtually tonight. And for those of us who are here with us, we ask that you keep your mask on at all times unless you're actively eating or drinking. The restrooms are located behind me, but we ask if possible that you hold off on going back there just until the event has completed, if at all possible. The last call for drinks and snacks from our cafe will be immediately at the end of the event, and we ask that you refrain from purchasing anything during the event just to not distract from the reading this evening. And I'm going to say this now, like I always do, but we have a wonderful cafe sink just over there. And it is where our ice machine drains, and it does this thing where it gurgles for 60 seconds. It's really fun. We all love it. And now you know that it's going to happen. We also have some of our copies of our poets' books for sale just over there. You're also welcome to hang out at the end of the evening and browse our entire stock. Your support of the store is what makes free events like this possible. And with all that being said, I will invite Chris up to get things started.
Hello. So forgive me if I'm looking at my phone. Word is that our baby is not sleeping tonight and screaming her head off. So I'm live streaming that. Hey, thanks for coming out tonight. It's the Hemingway's finale. Thanks for everybody showing up, everybody on Zoom, all of our writers tonight. It's an exciting group. I'm really excited to listen to you guys. So I wasn't planning on actually saying anything tonight. I was just going to read a poem and sit down. And then I had a few beers, so I'm going to say a few things. So I started with Hemingway's. Jimmy invited me out. I used to work at a bookstore. He would come by, buy books. And I'm like, oh, Christopher, you should come out to Hemingway's. But well, I was there a few times when I was in college. And you know, it's great. But I'll try to make it out. Oh, you should come out. You should read sometime. So he invited me to read, and I read, and it was a lot of fun. Jimmy was, legendary and always supportive. He was so supportive of really everybody in the local writing community.
Why don't you put together the finale this year?
Okay, I could do that, I guess. I've been running some meetings with the Yenzer and the Scott Silvey back there. We've been doing stuff. So it's like, okay, that's an honor, Jimmy. Thank you so much. So I did one, and I did another, and another, and another. And then, you and the new Yenzers, you're the finale. Now on. Okay, all right, thanks. So that's why I'm here tonight, I guess, is because I was just invited to keep coming back and do this. Jimmy just took a shine to me at some point. So thank you, Jimmy. And thank you, Joan, for continuing to put up with me and Jimmy's accent. Now I'm just going to read a poem and get out of the fucking way. And there's a message from my wife. So I'm going to read a quick poem and go read that message. Unless you want me to read the message and just depend. Maybe my wife is last year in this thing. Hey, okay, get the fuck home right now. Oh, there's if you're out there and you don't have kids. It's three. Okay, I got to do this quick. This is called Bridge by Mr. Jim Harrison. Bridge. And this is about what we're doing here tonight. And thank you to White Whale. Thank you to Ari, as always. Such a wonderful space and so welcoming, and just thank you for having us. So finale, spill beer, rip pages out of books, take them home, all that stuff. Jill and Ad love it when I say that. Bridge. I'm already overstaying my open. I need protective. Make me look at this. Most of my life was spent building a bridge out over the sea, though the sea was too wide. I'm proud of the bridge, hanging in the pure sea air. Machado came for a visit, and we sat on the end of the bridge, which was his idea. Now that I'm old, the work goes slowly, ever nearer death. I like it out here. High above, the sea bungled up for the Arctic storms of late fall, the resounding crash and moan of the sea, the 100-foot depth of the green troughs. Sometimes the sea roars and howls like the animal that it is, a continent wide and alive. What beauty in this, the darkest music over which you can hear the lightest music of human behavior, the tender connection between men and galaxies. So I sit on the edge, wagging my feet above the abyss. Tonight the moon will be in my lap. This is my job, to study the universe from my bridge. I have the sky, the sea, a faint green streak of Canadian forest on the far north shore. Thanks. Now, Joan Bauer.
Oh gosh, it is so great to see you all. It is just, it is a joy to be here and thrilling to be doing the grand finale. And we're so lucky to have this space and to have this beloved community of poets and writers and great readers and enthusiasts for the written word. And I'm just going to get going here right away. Miss Macross is a Pittsburgh-based lunar witch who enjoys watching mecha anime and taking naps. Her most recent chapbook, Late Tight in a Night Space was published by Alien Buddha Press in 2022. She is the publishing director of Write Pittsburgh and inconsistently blogs at missmacross.com. You can find her on Twitter or, you know, anyway, at Miss Macross. Please welcome Miss Macross.
Yeah, that father was a little old now. All right. Well, I'm very, very excited to be here. Thank you so much, Joan and Chris, for inviting me. And thank you so much, White Whale, for hosting. Last time I read White Whale, this part wasn't a thing. That's really rad. I'm just really excited to be here. All right. I'm so excited to kick this thing. Let's go. This piece is about a creepypasta. I heard about you on our friendly neighborhood number station, your coordinates breaking through static, and to thank all the experts think they're secret missile codes. I heard about you, and then I found you wrapped in coarse-soaked Appalachian steel, and I'm not afraid. I cut my teeth on rust as thick as yours, and I've grown into a confident woman. Last night, I read a manga about a girl who enters a dreamy coma state after eating her parents' hearts. Through her dreams, she slowly manifests a new island in the real world, an island of cannibals. I think about this when I enter your walls, my hands against your hulls. I'm not scared. I'm just doing it for stability. Aren't we all? I find an old Dell computer tower in your rubble and I take it with me. When I leave, I cut my sinister hand on your rust. I forget to clean it. There is one media file on the computer, a video file. I watch your video, you're offering to the modern world. It looks like a documentary from the 80s, but who knows? I still see bad firms around Novell all the time. Hers is pretty awful. I cannot understand her words. What kind of documentary is this? Grains of unearthly static speckles, and it slowly zooms out to show the full body, and oh, I have not heard of it. Eventually, I will learn that this video is a hoax, but you and your rust are not, and I am not ashamed to confirm you. My sinister hand will fester, and eventually I will lose it forever. Tonight, I only lose my confidence. I throw away your coordinates, and I do not listen to the number station again. I wrote this before 2020 because I started feeling like big sad girl hours, but like it's unfortunately more like pertinent now. Upon hearing about the ghost ship fire, I remember telling a friend at an open mic that a similar tragedy is bound to happen in Pittsburgh within the next 5 to 10 years. At the time of this writing, it hasn't, but I can no longer afford my rent, and that friend and that open mic are no longer around. Something from my checkbook. So big thank you to Alien Budapest for publishing. Pretty rad, and I'm very honored. It's called Animal. You know, I used to look at liars as pitiful people, as movie villains, as failures unworthy of happiness. You say, I don't think dogs like me anymore because they ignore you when you try to pet them. I joke that it's because they can smell the evil on you. You recoil, reply, that really hurt. I was joking, and this is all a joke, right? And at least this cat at the party seems to like you, and maybe that's because cats don't give a shit about anyone but themselves. And I say, I want to be that cat, and you twirl my hair around your fingers until you get caught in my nose. Did you know that Jimmy Buffett wrote a crime novel and had the fucking nerve not to call it Murderitaville? For all his land sharks on the same ship for that. Oh. Very 2005 rock music video breakup, Chopped and Screwed on season 2 on VH1. It's a vanity story. Just invest a little more. Don't you want to be successful? The best don't edit. They're maximalists. The best hire people to edit their toes until they're unrecognizable to their feet. They're minimalists. Ultimately, all will reveal itself as just a dream. Listening to the wind between ears. I got drunk by noon on a Sunday, passed out reading the Rock of Love Wikipedia page. Woke up a few hours later, but because it's winter, the sun had long since set. Well, early signs of infection. We left our takeout at the restaurant, and it has rooted itself to the table, which is bolted to the floor. In 20 years, the soft matter from our burritos will take over the entire table. It will look like a rectangular mushroom dripping with yellow spores. In 30 years, my liver will be sliced in half by a surgeon half my age, and she'll be very nice about it. Have you ever been stressed? I'll ask her under anesthesia. What an awful question to ask someone who works 24-hour shifts. Back to now. We soften our teeth with sparkling drinks, and I bruise my vocal cords swallowing you in the parking lot. You're pulling my ponytail, and when you stop, I feel prickling across my scalp, little needles sewing intentions. More. This is a very silly poem. It's because I like to just jump around Wikipedia for several hours a day, every day, all the time. It's really healthy. So I'm very fond of the section that's just like unusual Wikipedia articles. And this is one about the Mariko Aoki phenomenon, in which case in the mid-90s, this like interviewer went into this like bookstore and was like interviewing people about like how do you feel about books? And this woman, Mariko, responded, "Every time I'm in here, I just have this horrible urge to shit." And it turned into this like thing where like other people were just like, "Yeah, you know, sometimes when I'm in the bookstore, just kind of like go." And yeah. So then it became like a phenomenon. The Mariko Aoki phenomenon. So I wrote a very silly poem about this very silly thing. In light of so much new information, it's no wonder you feel the urge to shit yourself. But try looking at this clinically. There are contributing factors, specific symptoms. It's a phenomenon universal to humans entering bookstores, checking phones, illness, walking reality, recognized a bow-legged, pallid borderness bubbling. One sufferer describes the intensity as Armageddon class. Pain, increasing anxiety, worsening when the contributing factors encountered again, flap of butterfly wings in Brazil setting off a tornado in Texas, handwritten check in New York setting off a bomb in the catacombs, continuous motion, seasick motion, chaotic motion, natural motion. Just one more. Thank you, everyone, for listening. This is about 2 years ago, walked home. From the Mitski show at Mr. Smalls, and I was a little drunk and I was crying, and then I wrote this. Called Amaro Attends a Mitski Show on a Spring Night in Pittsburgh. Bird bones are hollow and burn faster than my own, but I can burn too. Who knows if there will be any evidence of life after these flames subside. I turn 27, 28, 29 in the crematorium, and as the temperature rises, my bones shrink. That's why my teeth are so small and why they chatter as I tell you things you not along to until I fill you with too much despair. Or until you realize that I will not give you my body in exchange for listening. I already gave my body to the hot metal bridge and the stars. I was offered a job and I accepted it, but then they said that they could not give me a formal offer until I complete a credit check, which I may fail. If I fail, I will make a list of every bridge in Pittsburgh, and if I fail, I will insert this list into a randomizing generator, and the one that it spits out will be the one that spits me out. I'm walking to the Mitski show. Along the side of the road, I see my car, but it is not my car because the color of the mirrors actually matched the peach. My car is falling apart. My car's falling apart? It's falling apart. I was selected at a young age as a child prodigy to fight in this war. It was all an accident and not nepotism, though I can understand why you'd assume that given who my father is. My father is a 58-year-old skeleton who calls once a month to ask me to call my mother, but everybody from our space colony knows that she died in 1979. My bird has hollow metallic bones and a humanoid head. It has lots of dents in the side, and because of that, I get pulled over all the time. I was selected as a child to go into space. When I cried, I was slapped in the face, and when I did not follow orders, I was slapped in the face, and when I made the decision that led to me becoming an adult, everyone just started to ignore me. One battle ends, and now I'm walking home from the Mitski show. Mitski is 5 months younger than me. I do not have family to borrow money from for rent this month, so I guess I should clean out the backseat of my car, which is falling apart. Her voice echoes, "Nobody, nobody," as my wreckage floats among the stars. For my obituary, they will choose a younger and hotter photo of me. They will call me a new type of woman, the type who didn't make her pain small in her heart, because when my hollow humanoid-headed bird hits the water, the waves will destroy the nearest neighborhood. That is my legacy. Thank you so much.
Ooh.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. Cedric Rudolph is a writer and educator living in Pittsburgh. During his time at Chatham University, where he earned his writing MFA, he taught at Allegheny County Jail. He continues to teach inside and outside of traditional classrooms. From 2021 to 2023, he served as diverse faculty fellow instructor at Community College, Allegheny County. This fall, he's teaching at University of Pittsburgh. His poems are published in Santa Fe Literary Review, the Pittsburgh Neighborhood Guidebook, and Coal Hill Review, and I'm sure some other places we don't have listed here. Okay, please welcome Cedric Rudolph.
First of all, I am so honored to be reading for the second time with Hemingway's, and I want to thank Joan and thank Chris for inviting me again. This has been a really cool series this summer, so I really enjoyed it. And thank you all for coming out. So I'm going to read six poems. The first three I have never read in public before, and the last three I've read around. So I'm reading the one that is going to take the most explanation first. So just two main things to say about this poem. First of all, it's a guzzle, which is a poem written in couplets, and all the couplets are sort of their own universe. And I've heard it described as if you were kind of string pearls in a necklace. That's sort of how all the couplets fit together. They're autonomous, but they, you know, they kind of are at the same party. It is, oh, thanks for laughing at that. And it's an Arabic verse form. There has a repeated word in each couplet called the Radif, and a rhyme in each couplet called the Kafiyah. And it was popularized by Persian poets. The other thing to say about this poem is that it's called Vanitas, and Vanitas were paintings by Dutch painters in the 17th century. And they were meant to remind us of our mortality. Yes, absolutely, yes. I told them to tell me if I need to speak more into the mic. So I'm so glad. Vanitas. Blank canvas and hollow heart. While the artist pleads miracles, the diva strips her makeup, flees the studio, grieves miracles. An angel orders, consume this sheet music. It dissolves down like honey. We feed miracles. Such luscious I offer in my candy bowl. Reach in, swirl around, give yourself over, bleed miracles. At night, my voice goes walking. Visits where low men abide. In whispers, they deal in greed and miracles. They tell you, be born on this Vogue cover, bloom from iris like a good girl. Photogs misread miracles. Still life, orchid drying, stamen dying like an old straw. To squeeze art from death, painters decree miracles. Her mom made her wear gloves in church, as if ladies break the world by touching it. The pastor guaranteed miracles. A woman full in stomach is most full in spirit. Thick thighs by candlelight with sage, pokeweed miracles. In mahogany, Diana Ross broke. Even with candle wax across her throat, she breathed miracles. Sever me from my self-hate. A voice cries, no, and drops me to mud, tear in heaven recedes, I heed miracles. A Burberry cape, Louis heels, corset, champagne flute, her midsection, she leaves sweat on stage, leaves miracles. Beauty sleeps. Beauty sleeps when the peacocks can't be bothered. They drag their tails through sand, catch pebbles between feathers, mixing red with dirt for mauve, dirtying their whites, purples, blues. Beauty sleeps when the eyes of the feathers too are swallowed. There is no verb for what a wing does to the air as it fans out. No word to capture how a wind beautifies as it moves. There's no word for a mother's grace in curlers, her eyes smiling into yours, the faint wrinkles at each eyelid like folded parchment. Absent of plumes, pomp, splayed tail feathers, there is an emptiness I will not describe. In their temperate house, they decide to hide from us. This cool March day, early spring, they decide we are not worthy somehow of the ache they create. This poem is insane. but I'm reading it. For the man who falls in love with me. Inside each egg is a heart of black opal, flower petals unwilt in frost. Among sediment, copper heaves. I am the workings of an old wheel of karma turning, and I am work. I exhaust myself, and in that exhaustion find my breath dancing. In me, the elements realized grief, capriciousness, martyrdom, exuberance, fear. I draw energy from a profane source. God, I get lost so often in out-belly dance harm. My striations resemble rock face, marbled skin, red-brown. My blackness flow on sax note, my darkness sip like honey. I seduce with the words I sear, call on ancestral hotness. I'll bring the goddess into bed with us. Come charging in, rush water, rough-hewn thing, visit me. Like so many winged beings before, twisting their shape, humped backs flutter to crow wing. Bet you smell like wild cherries and sweat. Bet your skin's soft. I can be soft. I can print for you. This is the nature of shape-shifting and being femme in this millennium. But most days, I am like so many boys. My hem drags the ground. I forget to wash behind my ears. I have not hung yesterday's laundry. I looked into my future and could not unclench myself. I braced for serial heartache. My limbs seized. My eyes narrowed back to the floorboards, except your voice cut across the silence, rich and buoyant. I stared up, smiling. Prince describes It Factor, circa 1999. Like a bullet train of electricity, like turning a shell to find half a human face, I was fusing words and rhythms in my shed. A bolt of energy slapped the base of my spine, loosed on maniac hips. Next thing I'm wearing lace and staring down in neon suit. I wonder if it was the same with Chuck Berry, Buddy Guy. I wonder if James Brown knew while hosing off a porch he had hymns in his knees. Grace Jones, this poem is titled Grace Jones. If you don't know who Grace Jones is, it's very hard to describe the woman that is Grace Jones. There's a great documentary about her called Blood, Light, and Bammy. I think, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but it's very good. It's one of the best documentaries I've seen. But yeah, she's a staple of the 70s and the 80s and 90s model. Singer, Grace Jones. Purple starlight on your face, the stage, Studio 54. The crowd rends denim shirts to pecs bright as diamond. You gyrate another, pearls, open your mouth for confetti to taste. If they never had a church grace, if they never had a church, against a disco silver floor, you sing do or die. Your eyelids sparkle two stories high. Your muscled arms wear a drape of sweat. The men reach, never touch. They turn, embrace each other. If they never had a church race, if they never had a church, a blessed bump equals sacrament. A blowjob equals holy. The children will be saved this year. Drag kings, ball queens, vocal cords bruised from screaming, but they praise into night. You could take them to church, Grace. Take them to church. And this is the last poem that I'm reading. And as always, it is for my grandma. Heaven is a dark gloom. Heaven is a dark gloom. It's coral bells and touch-me-nots and spider fern. Heaven is the garden she's been walking since she left her life. The crushed smoke beneath her muddy toes, the broken vines laying down their obstinance. She's been searching for water that no one would give. It doesn't matter. She knows where the river winds itself, around the cliffs, where the snakes polish their lungs in bile, where the darkness multiplies in sleepless schools of fish, where no man can write his language on reams of paper, where the belly of sorrow is slick and clean, where a heart is pumping vinegar inside the convex mouth of an oyster. Thank you.
Kayla Sargeson is the author of the full-length collection First Read, Main Street Rag, and her chapbooks, Head on a Shelf, on a Shelf, Blaze, and Mini Love Gun, all from Main Street Rag. Her poems appear or are forthcoming in 5 a.m., Cimarron Review, South Dakota Review, with Lisa Alexander. She co-curates the Laser Cat Reading Series. So Kayla lives in Pittsburgh, where she teaches at the University of Pittsburgh and Carlo University, and served as interim director of the Mad Women in the Attic Writing Workshops. And it is a special joy to have Kayla reading tonight. Yay, Kayla. Welcome to Kayla's Garden.
You know, it'd be like that. Hello, everyone. Oh, this is wobbly, but it's okay. I'm so happy to be here. I'm so happy to be reading for Hemingway's. Long live Hemingway's. Long live Hemingway's. Thank you, Joan and Chris, for having me, and RIP Jimmy. We love you. And I'm so happy to be reading with all of you. Poetsburg is right, isn't it? So I'm not a theme kind of girl, but because I've known a lot of you for like 1,000 years, I know a lot of you know, but my grandmother died recently, and she was the one I always talked about, the one who like, raised me, the one who is like the best person in the world. So I thought I would go through like all of my poems, which was great, and read the ones where like read some of the ones where she appears. So I'm doing that, and it was both more than I thought and like less than you'd think, but math was never my thing. Manaca, PA. Oh, and thanks to White Whale, love yous forever. I didn't forget if Jill and Ad are watching. Manaca, PA. I know black, the cold Western Pennsylvania sky, no stars, my grandmother's 2.5 bedroom house in a too grubby to be something still town with dive bars where you can get a Miller Lite for $1 and Pabst for $3 if you're feeling fancy. Where my dad's a member at the Sons of Italy Club, and he takes me there to drink well gin and tonics while he flirts with the bartender. Doesn't come to my defense when the men in the bar try to take me home. My grandmother calls him an idiot. And if there is a hell, she's sure he's going. But couldn't hell be right here when the sun sets above the long abandoned paper factory? My ex-lover still parks across the street and still smiles when I get in the car. We get high before he drops me off again across the street, and we make plans we may or may not keep for when I come home again. At no later than 11 p.m., my grandma goes to bed. With a cigarette between fingers, I watch TV through the window while she sleeps upstairs in a blue fleece nightgown, electric blanket on. Thank you. Thank you. And Graham was a soap opera kind of girl, you know, and hers was Young and the Restless. That Victor Newman got her every time. First read. In my grandma's soap opera, The Young and the Restless, all the bad women wore red lipstick, and I loved them. How they cheated on their husbands with the gardener, seduced their sister's boyfriends, committed murder, and flirted their way out of life in prison. My grandmother watched it early in the morning in the family room, and I woke myself up to watch it with her. I wanted to be one of these women. Glamorous Nikki, married to business tycoon Victor Newman, or Jill, constantly at odds with her millionaire mother. Sharon, the innocent teenager, had light pink lips, just a tinge of color. When my mother spent evenings blow drying my long brown hair, I practiced perfecting a red pout in her makeup mirror, dreamed of pearls and the $1 million bra. At 4 years old, playing at her vanity table, I was hungry for red, Spanish red, another Estee Lauder, red like my mother's 94 Sunfire, her silk comforter, the prettiest negligee in the Victoria's Secret catalog. If she was in a good mood, my mother told stories about her 20-something self working behind the Estee Lauder counter at Kaufman's, told me stories about French perfume and the men who bought it for their wives, the hundreds of lipsticks she sold in a week. She gave me red lipstick dreams, taught me how to test lipstick on my hand to see if it's the right shade, and instructed me, follow the shape of the mouth. Always use a lip pencil. Kiss a Kleenex to get rid of the extra. And that's back. Those were lip pencils are key. I'm glad they're coming back. And this is a newer poem. Walking over the 10th Street Bridge. It's the 1st of September, and my grandmother calls to tell me her cousin's husband died. They were married 72 years. I've spent the past two thinking about moving to Savannah, but there's something about the brown water of the Monongahela that keeps me here, something grounding in the dirt, the smoke blowing from whatever factory is still operating across the river. I look through the graffiti tags like old friends. Awake, Kuru, FTC, RIP Doc, Schizo, who I think is in jail in New York. In Savannah, there's nothing to hold on to. I float on dry land, cling to men who are just as slippery, say, I love you in the cliched moonlight way. I don't know how people stay married for 72 years or why. Last night, I looked up how to forgive on the internet. Nothing new there. So I move through the Armstrong Tunnel like I'm underwater, cross the bridge with dirty feet, dirtier heart. Thank you. The stand is making me nervous, but that's all right. I'll live. And this, I wanted to read this poem because Graham liked it. I think because there wasn't any swearing or fucking in it. But, you know, it'd be like that. So just let me, where is it? Maybe I'm not reading it. Where is it? Don't you hate that? Like, this book came out so long ago, and I don't know what's going on in it. I might not find it. Sorry, you guys. I hate being that guy. I hate that guy. Okay, I found it. And so, yeah, she liked this poem because it's pretty, I don't know, grandma-ish, I guess. 139 Ridge Avenue. I feared the returning, the weeping willow trees catching small toys, rubber balls, a stuffed Curious George, and the occasional laughter from my sister and me, wrapping the limp branches around our 7 and 5-year-old bodies, 2 trees for 2 daughters. I cannot answer why it's all in the back of my mind, coming out only in dreams, where I still see the view from over the sloped backyard, a big hill hiding the rest of Chippewa Township. But I see a Dracula castle, another world amidst the dead trees. And I'm closing with this one. I know he's really controversial, but Graham loved Elvis. You know, I think all women of a certain age do, but she loved. So this is like, this has a little bit of everything, like Elvis, like Graham stuff, and then it's a little dirty, so for Jimmy, you know, you gotta make it dirty for Jimmy sometimes. This poem is, and this is my last poem, thanks again everybody. Keeping my dick in my pants. I'm inside the Abbot Street mini bar, staring at the selection of fudge tops in the cooler, when a guy walks up, bends down to my ear, says, I live around the corner. I think about bending him over right there, but I'm distracted by the red light in me about to change. Maybe because I keep having dreams about colors, my life turning into a psychedelic haze where it's 1958 and Elvis Presley was drafted into the army. And who will dance for us now? Who will gyrate his hips in front of the television? And who will be captured, lock shot from only the waist up while Elvis is away at war? America does not want to see his shaved head get onto that plane, but America wonders if he cried for his mama when the bombs and guns got too loud. He loves his mama because even the king needs a little TLC during war, needs a little squeeze. But what do I know about such things while I'm sitting on my bed dreading going to work when I want to stay here with my cat and call my grandma just to hear her voice on the other end? Because sometimes I just need to know the people I love are alive and okay, whatever that means. Because it's 2010 and I'm barely into my 22nd year, and I feel sometimes I don't know much about anything, just that when Elvis sings Mama like the roses on his Christmas album, even though I don't like Christmas, I cry a little. Thank you. And bye bye to everybody at home.
Oh, wow. Thank you, Taylor.
Yay.
Roy Tequila is the author of 7 books, most recently a hybrid memoir. They Write Your Name on a Grain of Rice, On Cancer, Love, and Living Even So. And a poetry collection, How Do You Like It Now, Gentlemen? Brickhouse Press, winner of the 2021 Wicked Woman Poetry Prize. Her book, Belief is Its Own Kind of Truth, may be received. Wow, the Saroyan Prize for International Literature from Stanford. She writes for Pittsburgh Magazine and directs the undergraduate writing program at the University of Pittsburgh at Greensburg, where she is a professor of English. Please welcome Laura Jaquina.
Perfect. I think that's good. Okay, into the mic. Hi, everybody. Thank you all for being here. Thank you, Joan. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, White Whale. And I'm sorry to Kayla's grandmother for what I'm about to do. This is an excerpt from my forthcoming memoir, which will be out in this fall, called They Write Your Name in a Grain of Rice. And this is a little excerpt from the book. The book is, in theory, a cancer memoir, but it's mostly about waiting for a diagnosis, you know, that moment where you're waiting and you're waiting for news. And everything here is written in vignettes, and it's kind of a stream of consciousness. And there are some words in here that Kayla's going to make, but Jimmy would. So cool. Love, Jimmy. All right, this is called Your One Phone Call. I'm eating a Greek salad at Panera when my phone rings. I don't usually pick up, but it's been a week since my biopsy, and I'm still sore, and my right boob is bruised, black and yellow, and I've been waiting days that have stretched on like 600 miles of bad road. My boob looks like Gorbachev's forehead. My boob looks like an ink blot. Who's Gorbachev? My daughter, my Gen Zer, says. I say, he tore down the Berlin Wall, sort of. There are bits of the Berlin Wall on display in Ocean City, Maryland, in Ripley's Believe It or Not. I have pictures of my daughter there in front of the graffiti bits written in English, don't go with the flow and move with the groove. Rainbows, rainbows. In whatever language, rainbows mean hope. Gorbachev's forehead birthmark used to be called a port wine stain. Many people had these when I was growing up, though I never see them now. Doctors, genetics, evolution, who knows? In Gorbachev's forehead, I see a map of a small country that looks like it's melting or crying, maybe. I believe in the cosmos, Gorbachev said when asked about his religious beliefs. All of us are linked to the cosmos. Rorschach, the father of inkblots, died at 37, precisely 18 years younger than I am now. It's funny the things I think about lately. It's funny the kind of math I do when I usually shudder away all things now. Did you know that Rorschach looked like Brad Pitt? Brad Pitt and Rorschach looked like Father Mike from St. Regis. They all had amazing hair. Do you remember that Brad Pitt was once married to Gwyneth Paltrow? Gwyneth Paltrow has a lot of ideas about hair and salads, self-care, and conscious uncoupling. Her company, Goop, sells a $3,490 solid gold dildo called Olga. And a candle scented like Gwyneth's vagina. Gwyneth Paltrow's vagina candle with hints of bergamot costs $75. It's often sold out and on back order. Years ago, when I lived in New York, I saw Brad Pitt on the street scooping poop from a snippy little dog that I think was Gwyneth's. What the hell was wrong with you back then, Brad Pitt? All 10 of Rorschach's images look like vaginas and ovaries and pelvises. A few of them look like bunnies fighting. Another looks like the Grecian urn, beauty is truth, truth beauty. Brad Pitt played the Greek hero Achilles in the movie Troy. On camera, Brad Pitt looks immortal, lit through with gold. On the street in New York, Brad Pitt looked ordinary. Another New Yorker scooping poop. Cute, kind, human, connected to us all through the cosmos. My phone rings 3 times before I pick it up. Truth, beauty, beauty, truth. Those Greek figures chasing each other around that vase, stalling for eternity. I love that word, stalling. It's tiny, but clever, the way the vowels and consonants melt and stick like peanut butter in your mouth. Stalling, stalling. Try it. The word does what it says. Isn't language magic? See what I mean? My phone's ringtone is the sound of typewriter keys. A while back at the London Times, editors pumped the sound of typewriters into the newsroom, a subliminal thing. The sound of typewriters, even for people who grew up without them, gets writers excited. The words come faster. The pages fill up. Good for deadlines, good for profits. Writers pumped up on adrenaline and typewriter sounds move stories forward. This is, I finally say to the voice on the phone who asks to speak with me. I spear an olive into my mouth. My boob is a storm cloud. My boob hurts so much. Up until this phone call, I've been making jokes about my inkblot boob. These jokes make people other than Newman uncomfortable. Newman, my husband, has dubbed my 3D biopsy breast Frankenboob. Pitchforks, fire bad, he says and waves his arms. And I can't stop cracking Rorschach jokes. Tell me what you see, I say, and push my boob close to his face. My mother never breastfed me, he said. I've heard that, I say. At least they didn't stab you in the ass, Newman says, and grabs my ass hard enough to bruise that, too. My ass is not the same as it was when we got married at a discount wedding chapel in Vegas. I never appreciated it back then, or that I could get away with wearing a white bikini at the pool during our honeymoon at Circus Circus. It's been a few years since I've donned a bathing suit or asked for lights on during sex, but my husband makes me feel beautiful. Under Mikhail Gorbachev, the former Soviet Union practiced a policy called glasnost, a lovely word, which means openness and transparency. Truth, truth. I am grateful for this life. I expect this new call from the oncology nurse to tell me everything is fine. It was just a scare and I should expect another 20 years of love and ass grabbing and jokes about fire and angry villagers. Can you speak up, please, I say. The nurse's voice sounds muffled, like someone is holding a pillow between us. Can you speak up, please, I say again. I want to say, oh, come on. I want to say, we've been through this. Like, I have no idea if this oncology nurse is the same oncology nurse or the same oncology nurse I talked to the last times around. So many doctors, so many nurses. I spear another olive and think how much I love olives and nurses. I'm thinking of a nurse who is not the nurse on the phone. I'm thinking of a nurse with beautiful tattoos, the names of her children, some flowering vines. During one of my cancer screenings, this nurse I'm thinking of ran tests on me, and somehow we started talking about shaving our pussies. I knew this stripper once, the nurse said. She told me a trick, a little toner, antibiotic cream, and boom, no more bumps. I was at a strip club once in New Orleans. It was called Big Daddy's. Animatronic legs high kicked over Big Daddy's entrance. The legs wore thigh highs and red high heels. The bouncer who perched on a stool beneath the legs was a large woman with a buzz cut and black gauges the size of quarters in her ears. I loved and feared her from the start. Inside, a beer was $12. The wallpaper was worn red velvet and everything smelled a little dank, moldy, like wet cigarette butts on the beach after high tide. Newman and I sat next to the stage while strippers swizzled around a pole. The stripper had tattoos of flames all around her pussy. The stripper wore shoes I would never stand in, let alone dance or swirl a pole in. She had a cesarean scar, like my cesarean scar, pink, jagged, Frankenstein stitchery peeping out from all the flames. That looks like it hurt, my husband said, friendly, making small talk like he does. He meant the tattoo, which stretched from the stripper's pussy to her ass. It was impressive, really. Intricate art, all those vibrant reds and oranges and yellows. I can't imagine how long that took. I assume the procedure was clinical, the stripper lying on an exam table, legs in stirrups, the tattoo artist with a headlamp on, the kind gynecologists and dentists and cartoon coal miners wear. The stripper, obviously a mother, probably sweet off stage, or at least someone who might be a friend, said, "Why, you want to touch it?" And her voice was a razor, mean, and touching at strip clubs, even I knew, is always off limits. She said it like she'd love to call in the bouncer, who was built like a pork chop, who knew karate or jujitsu probably, who knew how to make people not touch each other, ever, no matter why, no matter how lonely or curious or lost. I drank my $12 beer. It was skunked. The mandatory second beer, that was skunked too. The strip club visit was supposed to be fun and sexy. It wasn't. When my sweet nurse said, boom, she did that karate chop thing professional wrestlers do, hands to the crotch, suck it, delete. That's life-changing, I said, about her tips for razor bumps. The nurse said, I know, and she chopped again. And we laughed and chatted and pulled our pants down to compare C-section scars and razor burns. We whined about bathing suits and what the hell, why should we care at our age? Lucky to be alive, lucky to get to the beach now and then. That last part, I stole from a line from Gerald Stern's great poem, Lucky Life. Some poems live inside me, strands of DNA I can point to and name. I want to tell the oncology nurse on the phone about my friend, the nurse with the beautiful tattoos and no razor burn. I want to talk about my love of nurses in general, because the nurse on the phone sounds so awkward and I want her to be okay, because I'm pretty sure I'm okay. No need for this ongoing strangeness between us. I want to tell her my mother was a nurse and that people called my mother Sarge because she wouldn't take any nonsense. I want to tell her Sarge was kind too, and how when I was a child in the hospital, my mother, Sarge, the nurse, slept on a cot next to my bed and worked double shifts so she could be with me. Such is the love of a mother who is also a nurse. I'm sorry, the oncology nurse on the phone says, and I'm confused. I think I ask her name, and maybe she tells me, but I forget it right away, even though I try so hard not to do that. Names connect us to each other. Names remind us that we're human. Knowing someone's name changes things. It's harder to be cruel. It's harder to lie. When I sense awkwardness, when I feel other people's discomfort, I fill up the space between us with words. I talk, I keep talking. You may have noticed this. Indulgence. Thank you for your patience, all these typewriters in my mind. The nurse on the phone, whose name I don't know, says sorry again and more pillowy things. I stop talking and stop eating and look at my salad, all these extra olives. Panera usually skimps on olives, so these olives are their own miracles. A love or hate of olives is, scientists say, genetic. So is a love or hate of cilantro. Some people think cilantro tastes like lime. Other people think it tastes like soap. I love olives. I love cilantro. Nature over nurture, sometimes even on our tongues. I love my mother, Sarge, the mother who raised me. She loved olives too. What my birth mother loves, I have no idea. Nature over nurture feels like a lie, a betrayal at least. After my daughter was born, I found my birth mother through Catholic Charities. I wanted a family medical history for my children, I said. History of cancer, history of heart disease, history of mental illness. My birth mother, whose name I know, refused. Instead, she wished me dead. My birth mother has never called me by my name, neither the name she gave me nor the ones my parents gave me. By keeping me nameless, she allows herself a necessary distance, professional, cool. She can protect her own heart, and I understand. By keeping me nameless, my birth mother allows herself the space to be cruel. That part, I understand less. As I write this, my birth mother is still alive, and my mother is not. cancer. If I had to choose, I'd choose nurture over nature every time. In a booth across from me, a mother feeds her tiny daughter something that looks like pudding. The girl strapped into a high chair doesn't like being locked down, so she bobs and weaves, and the sprig of blonde hair ponytailed on top of her head burbles like a fountain, something to wish on. In Rome, I threw cones into a fountain. I've thrown coins into fountains in Paris, in Belgium, into a sad koi pond in Monroeville. The fish in that koi pond died, I think, partly from all the coins and empty Orange Julius cups and the cigarette butts people threw in there. Poor sweet fish, all that filthy water, all those wishes. Monroeville Mall, my home country, country of Dawn of the Dead, which is filmed there, Monroeville, Pennsylvania, the birthplace of zombies. Help me, the little girl says, and her voice pops like bubble wrap. Her mother says, shush now, you're fine, and spoons more pudding. The nurse, who is nameless, tries twice to pronounce my name. Close enough, no worries, I say. I say it rhymes with tequila, but without the worm. Funny, funny, always that. Everything's a joke to you, my father used to say to me, you jackass. The nurse on the phone doesn't laugh. Help, the little girl dodging the spoon says. Shush now, you're fine, her mother says. I'm sorry, the nurse says. Again, again. In Spain, there's a version of Panera called Pan Pan. Meat and cheese and bread. Everything a person needs to go on living. My first time in Spain and my second time and my third time, I lived at Pan Pan. I knew what to order. Carne, queso, pan. I knew the order of things. The little girl in her high chair sounds far away, her cries muffled by the pudding. The nurse says again, I'm sorry. The nurse says there's a malignancy. I somehow ignore her. At Pan Pan, the bread was pillowy, a cloud, la nube, bread and cheese, staples, all a person needs in this life. The nurse says, I am very, very sorry. I think when people talk about leaving their bodies, near-death experiences, this is how it might feel. The untethering, la nube, lo siento, the cloud, I'm sorry. One phone call like this. Shush now, the little girl's mother says. You're scaring people. Stop scaring people, a doctor who wrote to me said. I miss my mother. The nurse does not say cancer. She says malignancy. When I was a flight attendant in my other life, we were trained to call storms, weather, and turbulence rough air, and a crash a hard landing. A bomb threat was an incident, and a hijacking was a trip. A drink was a beverage, no matter how weak or strong. Never drink coffee or hot tea on an airplane. The water used for coffee and tea comes from the same source as the water used in the toilets. Planes are limited. The ice is suspect too. Maybe everything on a plane, in the air, on the ground causes cancer. And yet every profession has a language meant to keep people calm. Every profession has its own language of kindness to protect people from panic and pain, to keep people believing that we are forever tethered to this world. In what world does the word malignancy sound better than cancer? Ours, maybe? More syllables, at least. Do you want to touch it? The stripper in New Orleans asked my husband. She spread her pussy like a map. Then she pulled back, stomped a heel off the ledge of the stage, and knocked my second $12 Heineken to the ground. Gwyneth Paltrow was on my flight once. Gwyneth fake gagged and threatened everyone and required oxygen because she thought her first class vegetarian meal may have nestled against her seatmate's prime rib. Malignant, malignancy. Gwyneth, who friends call Gwynny, fanned her face like she was on fire. She stuck out her pretty pink tongue so I could check it for poison. Gwyneth's lovely baby butt complexion splotched over as her anger flared. Her seatmate, his meat bleeding a little, looked mortified. Their meals never touched, I swear. Whatever, Gwyneth Paltrow, you beautiful, rich creep. May you live forever, even so. Thank you.
I'm just going to give you a little heads up before I introduce Dave Newman, that at the end of the evening, we're going to do a photo of the poets. And as much as all of you are going to want to rush up here and tell them how unbelievably great they are, we would like you to let us take the photo and then rush up and tell everyone, okay? So don't go anywhere, all right? They're going to all drag you over. Thank you. I appreciate it. All right. Now, so this is really quite an evening. And I'm really happy that we are here. And thank you all in Zoom world for being here. Dave Newman is the author of 7 books, including The Slaughterhouse Poems, who named one of the best books of the year by Elle magazine, and The Same Dead Songs, a Memoir of Working Class Addictions. 2023, he lives in Trafford, the last town in the Electric Valley. Please welcome Dave Newman.
Poetry reading is the only place in the world where I might be considered vaguely tall. I have a new memoir out. I'm just going to read something from it. It's really hard to pick from a full-length collection. Is that okay? And so I remember this old poem I have, which was based on the guy who my memoir was about, a guy who really struggled with drinking and drugging to the point where it became comical. My brother called me one time from Michigan and said, "Ants on the prowl for money." And I heard, I'm like, could he be at my door? He could be. And he was. This is a poem called Take Anthony Davis. Take Anthony Davis out of the holding cell and walk him past the police desk and unwrite the paperwork and put him inside his car and return him to the bar and unpour every beer he hammered and the shot he slammed and backstep him to the bathroom to unto all the blows he stuffed up his nose with his dirty ass fingernail. Reverse him home to the game on TV is a sport not worth betting, and the child in the other room is not listening to the fight his mom and his dad have every Friday night over football. Do this again and again until the bookies and drug dealers disappear and the jobs and the money reappear, and do it again, holding on the button of remorse for years and years until the pain caused and accumulated is as small as a strip of asphalt, as small as a backboard in a hoop, as small as the ball in Anthony Davis' hand as he skies were filled with the best 2 points of his life. His mother is in the window. His father is at work. There must be a way to do this right. This is called The Worst Weed I Ever Bought. The worst weed I ever bought smelled great, didn't get me stoned, and tasted delicious in a nice tomato sauce over angel hair pasta. My brother has a pretty good job, and sometimes they send him to those trainings where you like, you feel ridiculous and you introduce yourself and everyone goes around the room and says, tell us something or something. Well, I have a boat or I have a second house. And they get to him and he says, I like candles. And it shuts the whole fucking room down. No one knows what to do with that. I too like candles, but I also like foaming hand soap. This is called Foaming Hand Soap and Chicken Nuggets. I'd rather cry in my car then face the 18 women in line outside the Bed Bath and Beyond. Everyone deserves foaming hand soap. And a lot of us like sales, but the crowd is now 22, still all women. And the store won't open for another 20 minutes. and the line of Chick-fil-A across the Miracle Mile parking lot is as long as a train loaded with bankers leaving Western Pennsylvania for New York City. I once wrote an op-ed for the Post-Gazette, op-edding that I was against Chick-fil-A donating money to religious groups who oppose gay marriage, but that ultimately I still eat their chicken because it's delicious and inexpensive, and my kids love it, and I'm often too tired to cook, and if I quit purchasing products from companies I disagreed with, I'd have to quit shopping completely and would eventually end up naked in the streets, not wearing a watch or taking phone calls or able to climb in a car or flag down in a room. All the gay people who ate at Chick-fil-A messaged me to say, thanks for being honest. And the other gay people, ones who didn't eat at Chick-fil-A, messaged me to call me a bigot. And other people, all straight, wanted me to apologize for being a nugget-eating loser. And other people, also straight, messaged me to explain I was going to hell for supporting gay marriage. I like clean hands, but really, when it comes to foaming soap, it's all about the variety of scents. I wish my hands always smelled like vanilla, except in the fall, when I like them to smell like pumpkin. One of the women in line is eventually going to punch another woman in the mouth, and two cops, neither women, will show up with lights flashing, and the crowd will disperse, and I'll make my move from my car to the store and buy 6 bottles of hand soap to get 2 bottles for free. These sales make for bad math, and the cashier thinks I should buy 3 more bottles to get an additional 1 for free, but I'm already eyeing the candles, which are on sale at prices I can't afford, and besides, I'm hungry for chicken nuggets, which I can't afford, which makes me think I should eat my delicious hands. I live right on the Allegheny County, Westmoreland County line, and every year I try to go to the Westmoreland County Fair, which is a hoot. This is called the Westmoreland County Fair. The barbecue stand have all closed, and the kids who sang the Broadway medley dispersed to their parents, except the teenagers who hung by the stage like a bag of glitter, their outfits still catching the afternoon sun. One booth sold blow-up hot tubs for indoor or outdoor use, and another booth sold homemade root beer. The woman selling soap said, I just turned 90, in the spryest of voices, but looked as wrinkly as the last leaf falling from a maple tree before winter. She dyed her hair purple as an eggplant, and her soap smelled like lavender and butterscotch, except the one called Flamer Deluxe, a pink bar held in plastic wrap with fire scorched on the label and radiating the scents of cinnamon and clove. Pony rides were $5. Camel rides were $7. The fried brownies were a big hit, and so was the fried dough with powdered sugar. Near dark, the lights kicked on, and lots of people started to file out before the drinkers arrived and the rowdiness of the evening started. The ticker takers opened their rides, and the little roller coaster started rolling, and the spinny thing spun. On stage, a bunch of men with gray hair or bald as babies plugged in their instruments, and the singer, the only woman in the band, dressed in a blue evening gown with her boobs falling out, stepped to the microphone like a lover she'd like to choke into a romantic night, and started singing a song about a woman named Mustang Sally and the man who wanted to ruin all her fun. I was sick a lot as a kid, and then I did a lot of drugs when I got older. I'm not sure how those are connected exactly, but this was called my first fever. My mom said I was burning up, but I'd never been colder. When she left the room, I pulled up the blanket and dreamed of trains. What is it with sickness and how it stops time? I missed church, then a week of school. Later in life, alcohol. Later in life, heroin. I saw something beautiful as a sick child in a bedroom in Western Pennsylvania. The trains rolled along, and I didn't have to board. I saw a way to travel without traveling. So it is for those of us who don't believe in heaven. My head puffed up, full as a mason jar of silk, and my body invented rivers that move through my veins. I have chased that feeling for years. Some of you made the James Wright Festival this year, which I was lucky enough to be a part of. And I was reading the biography for about 6 months today, rereading James Wright's poems and sometimes writing my own poems or stopping to read more of his. And this is a poem he didn't write, or stop writing, I should say. So this is called This Is for Felix Jacoby. This is for Felix Jacoby, who worked as a junk man in Martins Ferry, Ohio. James Wright, who told the world about Ohio, started a poem about Felix, then set it aside to write another poem about Verona. That's the problem with poets from Ohio. They always want to sing about the faraway places. The poem about Verona is pretty shitty at best. Another tourist taking the place out of a place so they can sing about nature and the weather. Maybe it's the curse of success to be forced to write the poems already written, to be reminded we are hearing a real poet. I'd rather read about Wright's father, passed down in the stinky yard of Felix Jacoby. One working man with a slightly better job coming down to commune with another man, working man, to show his appreciation. Dudley Wright said about Felix, that man works hard. And James Wright wrote, work to my father is a holy thing. I hope to never see Verona or anywhere, not my home. But should I stand near a statue of Dante or trace Shakespeare, let me find a junk man to sit with and praise all his dirt. I'm gonna finish up with this poem. It's called Jacktown. I grew up in the 80s, which could be a lot of fun. It was also a time that kids really wanted to be adults as fast as they could, and adults didn't always recognize that children were children. So sometimes there was confusion in that space. This is about that. Jacktown. This is about the time I drove to the Jacktown Hotel to meet a married woman who was 30 years older than me and taught English at the junior high I'd attended a few years before. I was 16, between girlfriends, figuring out high school. The married woman wore tight sweaters long enough to be skirts. She wore her hair piled high and sprayed to stay. In junior high, I used to walk by her classroom before the morning bell to see her outfits, to see if she'd be leaning over her desk, balanced on her elbows, swaying her hips. Once, she blew me a kiss. Now, I finished my job at the paint store, stocking cans and brushes, straightening the books of wallpaper. I climbed in my parents' car and adjusted my hard on. It was pretty exciting. Being 16 and knowing you're going to bang a woman who once kissed your face off in the teacher's lounge when no one was around. I guess I was 14 then, stunned but excited. We prayed together once, something about her husband and their marriage. The prayer happened at the end of the study hall. The other kids already filed out. She said, are you religious? Because I made jokes about religion, about being religious, jokes to cover my parents' commitment to religion. I believed in God about as much as I believed in Algebra 1. I said, I go to church a lot. And she reached across her desk and guided me to sit in an old metal chair. She closed her eyes and I closed my eyes, then opened my eyes and looked at her closed eyes and her tits. We finished the prayer and she massaged my hands. Sometimes she massaged up to my elbows, then worked her thumbs into my forearms like she knew the spots. I wanted to do something with my thumbs, something like she was doing, something to show what I knew. I slept with a few girls, none with hips and none dressed in high heels and tight sweater dresses. This is about the time I drove to the Jacktown Hotel in all its decrepitude, the chipping paint, the dusty drapes, then waited in the parking lot for a married woman who promised to open her bra and let me come on her tits. Sometimes I took the bus from high school back to the junior high so we could meet in the parking lot and ride around in her car and make out on a back road. She always fixed her lipstick in the rearview mirror. I liked to watch the way she dabbed with a tissue or used her nails to make a line. Where was her husband? I can't remember. I didn't care. This is about the time I waited for a married woman who tasted like cinnamon gum. This is about the time I wondered if I should pay for the room. Minutes pass like hours when you're underage and hard. I thought maybe she rented the room and waited for me on a double bed, fiddling with the lamp and the TV. I climbed from my car, my parents' car, and walked the parking lot looking for her grandam. It was a big parking lot, potholed and barely filled with broken cars. When I didn't see her grandam, I assumed she'd been arrested. And now I was going to be arrested. I thought that's what happened to young boys and older women on Friday nights. So I drove off, nervous and scared, afraid of being arrested for being in a parking lot, waiting for an English teacher who said I could come on her tits or wherever I wanted. Maybe this has something to do with her husband. I hoped he didn't know me, that he didn't know I'd made out with his wife. Or I hoped he knew me, that I'd made out with his wife. I drove until the streetlights turned from red to green, then disappeared on back roads I'd been walking since I was a small child made of time. I guess I would have fought her husband in the streets. I guess I would have married her for sex, then asked her to buy me a vodka from the liquor store so I could share it with my friends while we swapped stories about banging older women who wore bras made of pink and white lace. Thank you.
You know how Jenny used to, you know how it was hard for us to get Jenny to read a poem?
Do tell.
He'd get in front of the group at Henry Bates, get in front of the audience, and you'd think he was going to read a poem, but in fact, he was not really ready because he was really very shy. And you didn't think he was shy, but he kind of was. And
is that true?
Yeah, I think so. And but I think we should find a poem to read tonight. What do you think we should do?
What do you want to read?
Oh, I don't know. Let's think. I think we should find something, but maybe not too dirty. I don't know. Maybe a little dirty. No.
How about it's not the enema, it's the fear of the enema. Or art of the jockey strap.
Or Calvin the weasel is Mother Teresa. Or save me a seat in church. Or the whores are the last to leave.
I think we should read Wrong as a Shit Sandwich with Cold Gravy.
You know, I don't think I've ever read it.
How about, I don't think there's a law that says you can't shit in someone's tuba, but maybe there should be.
How about understanding the meaning of stinky socks? We could read The Fat Lady Sings or Bukowski and Adam. I think we might have read that one, actually. Okay, yeah, okay.
But nobody ever whacks off and thinks of my friends.
Or Jesus is going to whack your ass. Or my mother has a cure for everything.
Well, there's 25 reasons the dog quit drinking, and head in a bowling bag.
Well, that's a good. I don't know. That's a tough. I don't know. Maybe next year.
Maybe next year. Maybe next year.
We are
in a bookstore, so a really good thing is to find a book and buy it. Maybe more than one.